Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Are you in the middle of a home improvement project? Maybe it has you perplexed about your next step. If so, you are in luck, because licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is here in the studio to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management, and joins us to offer you his expertise. Always a popular show when Darren is on, so call early is my advice. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's time for home maintenance, repair, and improvement on the program. And we welcome back Darren Tracy to talk about that. He is a licensed professional engineer with extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. If you have a question for Darren today, the number is 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
You know, you were on early in January, and soon after that program, you got an interesting email from, and I'll read a little of this. This is from a lady who wrote in from, I believe, the West Coast. She said, "I'm a retired special ed teacher, most recently in San Francisco." You're right. Not everybody can go to college. Not everybody should go to college, and not everybody wants to go to college. I think this everyone can go to college idea is elitist and foolish. There are good, satisfying, high-paying jobs out there, and the skills are needed. Thank you for mentioning it. And that is from a lady named Cindy. She wrote you.
Right. Well, I agree with her that college isn't for everybody, and the building trades are a good option. And college may not be an option for someone who graduates at 18 years old from high school. And I'm an example of that, a good example. The last thing I wanted to do when I graduated from high school was go sit in a room for 4 more years. I just did not want to do that. And I didn't. But I did come back and go to college and have my engineering degree, and I'm very thankful for doing that. But it's not for everybody. There are other options, and the building trades are one of those options.
We also got an email soon before we started. This is from Gina. And Gina writes, "I'm a realtor, and clients need to replace a roof. Could you speak to the differences in asphalt shingle versus raised rib metal roof, pros, cons, cost, durability, ease of installation?"
Yes, I can. Asphalt shingles are probably the most common roofing material used in residential construction. Mm-hmm. They're typically about 36 inches long, 39 inches long by 12 inches, 14 inches, and maybe 3/16, a quarter inch thick. Mm-hmm. And they're put on in singular pieces. And they're probably the least expensive roofing method as well, ranging from maybe $3.50 to $6 a square foot. The raised rib that she's talking about, they're different types of metal roofs. A common type is called a standing seam metal roof. That's probably what she's referring to. And they will last a long time. I should state that asphalt shingles roofs, the warranties are anywhere from 20 years to 50 or 60 mm-hmm. lifetime.
Yep.
You may not get the full length of that warranty, but the more you pay, the longer the warranty, and they do last for a long time.
Yeah.
The metal roof can last even longer depending upon the finish. The hot dip galvanized is one type of finish, and that might last 40 years before you have to paint it. Or there are other roofing materials that are pre-painted by the factory,
yeah,
with a fluorocarbon finish, and they hold up for a long time, and they provided a different architectural aesthetic, and they shed snow quite a bit in this geographic area, so you want to make sure that any of the snow coming off the roof is not going to wipe out any shrubs you have. So that's, you know, that's one of the downfalls of the metal roof, and they're probably 1.5 to 2 times as expensive as the asphalt shingle.
Okay, Darren Tracy is our guest. It's Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. And let's go to the phones. Dennis near Saratoga. Dennis, you're first.
Wow, that was quick. Okay, hi there. Yes. Hi, Darren. Hi, Ray. And I have a two-bedroom ranch, asphalt shingles, and I had the roof redone, and I have soffit to ridge vent venting to keep the roof cold and avoid air dams. And before that, it was a separate problem. The ridge vent hadn't been properly cut out, so we addressed that the second time, and I put in gable end vents because I always looked at how much snow builds up on the ridge and the ridge vent. So how can a ridge vent vent the warm air to keep your attic nice and cold if it's completely covered like it is right now?
How can it? What? It can't. And I've thought of that many times, and I've thought of it developing an invention, a particular type of ridge vent that would be self-melting of snow in order to provide the ventilation. But I think your idea of providing the gable vent, in a gable vent, for listeners that are not aware of that, it's a vent at the very peak of the end of your roof.
That's right.
The end
it's
of your
passive.
Roof. The end of your roof is called the gable end, as opposed to the eave end is where you'd install a gutter.
Mm.
So that's a good idea to have that gable vent in each end of the roof as an alternative method for air to exit your attic space in the event that you have a heavy snowfall winter like we're having this year, with thaws few and far between and the snow piles up on the roof,
right,
and you just don't get that ventilation.
Yeah.
So I like that idea of
right.
adding those gable vents.
I'm not seeing air, I'm not seeing ice dams. And is it possible that having the gable ends somehow sabotages the venting, the chimney draft effect? Because some people and studies that I've read seem to suggest that.
It can. It would short circuit the flow of the air coming in on the soffits, and the soffits is the area underneath the overhang part of the roof. Typically, you'd want that
sure.
air to come in and flow in a laminar fashion up through the ridge vent, which is on the peak. And if you have gable vents, that could short circuit that flow. But I think your idea of installing those to solve the problem of snow over top of the ridge vent trumps the idea that
okay.
the air may not flow up in such a laminar fashion.
Dennis, thank you for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Darren Tracy is our guest, and it's home improvement, maintenance, and repair today. Let's go to John in Albany. John.
Yes, thank you. My landlord disconnected my electric baseboard heat and installed a gas heater that uses the same duct system as the air conditioner. The ducts are in the wall near the ceiling, so the heat blows into the top of the room. But there's a ceiling fan nearby that turns both clockwise and counterclockwise. Can this fan blow the hot air down towards the floor? And in which direction should the fan go, clockwise or counterclockwise?
Hmm. Yes, it can blow it down towards the floor. And regarding clockwise or counterclockwise, that's a function of which way the blades on the fan are oriented. But you would want the leading edge of the blade of the fan at the higher elevation. So that so you can tell that way, and that will blow the air down. And then in the summer, to provide better cooling, you'd want to reverse that. You'd want to suck the air up.
Right. Thank you very much.
You bet. Bye.
John, thanks a lot for that call. It's 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. We'll take a quick break here and then get back to more of your calls. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. A quick email from Bruce, who has a question about wallboard. Bruce writes, I had some indoor weather-related leaking this winter. Two questions on the repair. One, how difficult is it to remove, replace, and retape wallboard in a small space, which is, in this case, a bathroom?
It's really not that difficult. It's a dusty, dirty, messy project. Depending upon how badly the wallboard was affected, you may not have to remove it. You could possibly just dry it out and then respackle over top of it.
All right. And the second question was, when wallboard is removed, what are the signs of mold and how serious before remediation must take place?
Well, mold typically is, well, it's everywhere in the environment, and it needs temperature, moisture, and food source to survive. So if those three things are present, then you can see it visually grow.
Okay.
So it's a visual phenomenon that you'll see develop. And, you should address those concerns, sooner rather than later. You really want to address why the mold is occurring in the first place, because you could clean it off and it would just come back. So you want to address the source of the problem.
Okay. Back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Joanna in South Hadley, you're on.
Hi there. I have a quick question. I'm not sure. In my 1948 home basement, there's a space above the foundation and right below the first floor, the rafters, that looks like it's just wood, and it directly faces the outside of the house. And they were literally 1948 old batting, some kind of insulation that's just crumbling and falling apart. I want to replace it, but I want to be careful not to get things that have like formaldehyde or PFOAS, toxic chemicals in them. Do you have a recommendation for the kind of, I don't know whether it should be bats or if it should be kind of rigid foam, or what's the best thing to use in there?
I think the best product to use is a rigid foam insulation or a spray foam insulation, because it typically holds up better to critters that would be burrowing in there. And it also makes a tighter seal. And that area is called a band joist or rim joist of a house. And really a lot of air leakage occurs in a home that contributes to a stack of effect in a home. And a stack effect is where air moves in at a lower elevation, and due to temperature and pressure differential, it exits out the top, higher elevation. So if you seal the air down low, prevent the air from coming in, you eliminate that stack effect, and it really helps the energy efficiency of your building. So a rim joist or spray foam. If you install rim joist, you cut it up into little rectangular pieces and install it in between your floor joist, and then you can seal around the perimeter with canned spray foam or even caulk. So that's what I recommend, and it really helps on the energy efficiency, Joanna.
So here's two follow-up quick questions. What thickness of this rigid foam do I need? And also, it seems to have, when I've looked at, vendors about this, some say that they are urea products. Again, I'm trying to get less toxic. So can you tell me what to look for in terms of what to either to go for or what to avoid, both in terms of thickness and composition, what's in this product?
Okay. Typically, the rigid board insulations range from a half inch thick to 2 inches thick, half, three quarter, one, one and a half, and two. I would try to put at least 1 inch thick in there. Anything you do will be helpful, particularly to seal up the draft. But the 1 inch is thick enough so it doesn't break apart easily. And the toxicity, I am not certain, but I think most of the products are fairly stable these days. One of the rigid products is polyisocyanurate.
Yes.
And the spray foam, it typically is, they can come in kits, two-part kit, and I think once they're cured, they're fairly stable.
All right. Joanna, thank you for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest today. And this one actually came in via email from Andrew. Andrew writes, "We own an old brick carriage house and have exposed brick walls on the interior. What is the best method to seal the brick from moisture if we want to build out an insulated 2x4 wall over the brick? We are concerned about potential mold growth behind the 2x4 wall."
So I'm assuming he has just bare brick on the inside. In order to, well, you could leave bare brick. I mean, that's an aesthetic that some people like. Actually like
doesn't
that.
Doesn't go out used. Of style, sure.
You see that in restaurants, cozy restaurants, and it has a nice feel. It's not so great for energy efficiency.
Right.
So if you want to address the energy efficiency, you'll have to frame that somehow so that you create a gap and can install some insulation. To do that, you could frame a conventional wall on the inside with 2x4 or 2x6 studs, or you can attach furring strips to the brick.
All right.
And to those wood surfaces, you then could easily attach wallboard.
All right, back to the phones we go. Darren Tracy is our guest. Tom in Kingston. Tom, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Darren. Good advice. I've been appreciating listening to this. Ray, it's a great show. Really, really appreciate that you guys do this.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, I was just a point of countering what you had said with respect to the ceiling fan. I find that I tell customers that when you stand under a fan, if you can feel the downdraft, it's blowing in the right direction, and versus trying to understand clockwise, counterclockwise, leading edge, elevated over the dragging edge or following edge, if you will. So bottom line, if you're standing under the fan and you can feel the movement of the air below you, that's usually the summertime fan. If you're standing under it and you don't feel the air coming down on you, that's the wintertime fan, just for the circulation and the convection. You want to create that turbulence of the room's temperature, the room's air, if you will. So,
but that's another way to determine the flow, but I would disagree with you. I would think that you would feel the flow of the air more if the fan was pushing the air down versus sucking it up, because if it's sucking it up, it's coming from a wider area, and then if it's rotating such that the air is going down directly below the fan, it would be pushing it down.
Couldn't you get a little smoke and just and put it under, hold I don't know, something
that
made...
Yeah, you get a lot of smoke.
Yeah, and then just go up and take a look, you know, one way or the other. We can work it out.
An incense stick.
There you go.
So, I think even referring to manufacturer's instructions with respect to the convection, there's more than one way to cool a room. So in this case, I think we can just say either way. Also another thing to consider is that the volume of the space that you're talking about, the person who had called in was talking about a relatively confined space, bedroom, a den, an office per se. There would be a potential that regardless of which direction the fan is blowing, it's going to create that turbulence and move it
around. Yeah. The key is have it on.
Hey, Tom, we got a terrible connection here. I apologize for cutting you short, but it doesn't sound too good from a technical standpoint. From an information standpoint, you hit a home run. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Louisa in Niskayuna. Louisa.
Yes, I have a 1954 ranch, and it has little to no insulation. And I'm just wondering, the best way to retro-insulate an older home, and what would you recommend? Kind of similar to the other call.
Okay, Louisa, the way you started your statement, I thought you were going to say I have a 1954 Chevrolet.
That would be great, too.
Like but, okay, ranches are relatively easy to insulate, and you get the most bang for your buck by starting with insulating your attic versus your walls. You have a lot more heat loss through your attic than you do your walls, and that's relatively easily insulated. You could use a blown insulated product. It could be wood fibers, or it could be fiberglass, either one of those. I like the blown cellulose fibers. It helps take up all the voids, and it minimizes the air infiltration. One thing I would caution you about, Louisa, and it ties into some of the other previous calls today, is consider ventilating that attic space with proper soffit and ridge vents and possibly gable vents too.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, the front of the house has some stonework, and so how would you insulate, like, the outer walls, like if you have, like, a stone front?
Well, you probably wouldn't want to insulate them from the exterior because that would take away your aesthetic. As a general rule for function, insulating on the outside surface of the building is most effective. In your case, you could investigate if you have any insulation in the stud cavities, the 2x4 cavities. Even though you have a masonry or stone exterior, I would expect that you would have wood framing on the interior. But the payback on that is a long time because you have to rip open your sheetrock walls or drill holes and blow insulation in. I would start with attic insulation. Your payback is much quicker there. It's a relatively easy job, and I think you'll see a significant energy improvement in your home.
All right, Louisa, thank you for calling. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. Now we go to Tracy in Cobleskill. You're on.
Hello, yes. I have an 1870, 1890 house. It has a stone cellar, and there's no water ever in it. I wanted to whitewash the walls and maybe put something on the floor, like Portland cement, a little bit of hydrated lime. Does that make sense?
Hi, Tracy. What's on the floor now? Is it a dirt floor?
It's a dirt floor.
Okay, it's a dirt floor. One of the best things you can do in a basement that has a dirt floor is apply a layer of 6 mil black polyethylene plastic to keep the moisture from wicking up into your home, because that earth is just like a sponge sucking water out of adjacent areas, and it will make your basement humid and smelly, and a really nice improvement. Be put down that 6 mil poly, and if you had the money and could afford it, on top of that you would add a poor concrete floor, or even fine crushed stone, or small paving bricks. If older homes, sometimes it's difficult to pour a concrete floor. We just had that problem on a project that we're working on. It was very difficult. We had to create a chute to pour concrete into the basement and then wheelbarrow it in place, and it's a tough job.
Yeah.
But you can also use small little concrete paving bricks.
Right on top of the
right
poly.
Right on top of the poly. Huh. It's a relatively simple, very effective way to make your basement more comfortable. So that's what I would suggest, Tracy.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you for the call. And now it's time for Bernard in Massachusetts. Bernard.
Yeah, hi.
Wow.
Hi, guys. My question is, water is leaking around the pipe that transfers the water from the well inside in the concrete at the basement. You know, and I tried to stop it by spraying some stuff around it, but it's still coming. And I'm asking if there is a better way that I need to do to stop the water from coming.
Okay, good question.
Okay. If I understand your problem correctly, Bernard, that the water is not coming from your well that's leaking into your basement. You probably have a pipe penetration through your basement foundation wall, and at that penetration, groundwater is seeping in that opening. So it's probably not coming from your well, but groundwater. And if you have a high water table, that's a tough problem to solve. But one thing you can do is clean out the area around the pipe. It's usually around an inch or inch and a half pipe that you have coming in through the wall.
Yeah.
Chip out. Is there a gap between the pipe and the concrete at all? Is there a notice?
No, there's no gap.
Okay, well,
but I can chip it.
Yeah, you can chip that out. I would chip that out to a depth of, if you could, a couple of inches or at least an inch, and the thickness of the annular ring would be something like a quarter inch minimum, and then you can inject epoxy, epoxy, or better yet, a hydrophobic material which expands and cures when it meets water when it comes in contact with water. It's a really wild material. We've used this on wastewater treatment plants to seal up foundation walls with bigger leaks. And we've injected it with grease guns and epoxy pumps. But it's this material, and it's not inexpensive. But you put it in that in a void, and when water comes in contact with it, it expands like crazy and cures.
Amazing.
It's a hydrophobic material.
Yeah, please, give me the name of the second material. Again.
Well, that's a general. Yeah, I can write it down. That's a general characteristic name of the material. I know one manufacturer who makes that product is called Sika, S-I-K-A.
S-I-K-A.
Yeah, actually, I remember the product name, too. It's called Sikafix HH. Sikafix HH. S-I-K-A hyphen F-I-X H-H.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a wild material.
Okay,
it's really good.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for the call. You know, this is a similar issue here with the email I got from Tom. Tom writes, my basement gets water when the ground is frozen and we get heavy rain. What is the best solution if I was going to dig around the foundation and install drain tile? And that's from Tom.
You dig around the perimeter of the foundation, some depth that you feel comfortable with. I guess the deeper the better, and that's a function of the grade that you have on your site, because you want the water to pitch away. So let's just, for the sake of discussion, you dig a trench 1 foot deep by 1 foot wide around the perimeter of your foundation. I would once that trench is dug, I would install a layer of black polyethylene. It's the same type of material that we talked about putting down in the basement slab a couple of calls ago. And then I would put a black perforated pipe, typically known as ADS pipe, in that trench, and then fill the perimeter of that with pea stone, which is like 3/8 inch diameter stone, and then run that pipe all the way around your foundation, and hopefully you have enough pitch away from your home where you can run that pipe away from your home. I'd like to see like 20 feet away, and so that would help carry any water away that goes up against your foundation and prevent these problems in the springtime. I see it all the time. I have that problem right now. And you can also use that stone as part of your landscaping, leave it exposed, the pea stone, and you wouldn't have to mow next to your foundation, and so that could be a landscape architectural feature.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Jim, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Darren.
Hello.
Darren, you and I are so on the same wavelength, it's not even funny. I really appreciate the answers that you're giving to people.
Okay, thank
you. But I would like to one-up you on the woman who wants to insulate her perimeter joist. I would go with a spray foam that is a water-based spray foam. She's going to pay a little bit more than she would to put in rigid foam, but it will be easier in the long run, because all a spray foam company would have to do is go in there and just shoot that perimeter joist all the way around, and it would eliminate an awful lot of hand work. And it also forms its own vapor barrier when it hardens, and it's non-toxic.
What do you think, Darren?
I do not mind being one-upped, but I think I did mention that spray foam, Jim. I did not mention water-based. I'm not familiar with a water-based. Typically, they're a two-part urethane. But, yes, they do a great job. They get in every nook and cranny. And as Jim mentioned, that I did not mention, it creates a vapor barrier, which is good. And
so we can't get you two to argue in any way here?
I'm not going to argue about this.
I don't think so.
It's a really good solution for the band joist and the rim joist. As you said, it's a labor saver. It's quick. You can buy these two-part kits, and you can spray them yourself, and it doesn't take long at all. They are expensive, the two-part kit.
There's guys out there that'll just walk in, and half an hour later they'll walk out, and the whole rim is done.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Hey, Jim, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Darren Tracy is here, and you are there at 800-348-2551. This one is another email that came in. And Bill in North Adams writes a question about a 1920 house. And Bill writes, what would be the best procedure for replacing a rotting sash window in a bathroom that has tiling surrounding the trim? Is it best to replace wooden trim with pressure treated or do a full replacement window? And if so, suggestions?
Depending upon how much is rotted out, with tile around, you could damage the tile replacing a complete window, and it may be difficult to match the size. You could replace just the sash. Take the sash out and have a new sash made, and you could have it made out of cedar, and that would be very water-resistant versus pressure-treated, and it's more aesthetically pleasing, too, particularly if you're going to leave that with a natural finish. But you can send me a picture. I'll mention that. My email is darren@westbranchinc.com. And my website, if you look up West Branch Engineering on your Google search, westbranchinc.com, that's another one. Either of those.
Okay.
If you send me a picture, I'll take a look at it, and I could give you a better answer on that. But I would look to just replace the sash, and you can have those made. Not that difficult to have those made, not that expensive, and probably more cost-effective, and will do the job.
All right, Darren Tracy is here. We go to Andrea in Northampton. Andrea, you're on.
Hey, Darren. Thank you so much for taking my call. We had Mass Saves come in last year and do some insulation in the house. They did a great job putting soffit tiles in and doing out the attic. And then the following summer, past summer, we had a terrible mold problem. I'm thinking the two are related, and I'm wondering if you can give me any suggestions on industrial dehumidifiers, which one of the cleaning companies recommended.
Where did you notice the mold, Andrea?
The mold was on the first floor, just above the basement, almost in entirety, like in offices and places that we were gone for one weekend, and it was just terrible when we came back.
Really, really. And then what was insulated, just your attic or attic and walls?
The attic was the only thing that was insulated, but the soffit joints in the basement were also done. And it was a pretty moist summer. We had left the windows open a little crack, and we had gone away for about a week, came back, and it was just unbelievable.
Okay. A couple items there. Basement area, soffit is up at the roof line. It wouldn't be at the basement area. But you do want to check your soffit in your ridge vent. By adding attic insulation, it should not affect the humidity level in your house much. You want to make sure that the passageway between your soffit and your ridge vent is free. Because often when that's when attics are insulated, or I should say sometimes when attics are insulated, they'll blow the insulation up right out to the very perimeter where the roof meets the top of the wall plate, and it blocks the flow of air. There are devices that you can install that are called proper vents, and they create a gap in that space. And they're relatively easily installed, and they're inexpensive. So that would be the first thing that I would check, definitely. And then regarding the there was something else. So the humidity level, I don't know that you would need an industrial dehumidifier, probably just a decent quality residential dehumidifier would work well. And you'd want to shoot for a target of about 50% relative humidity in your house in the hot, humid summer months like July and August, and that will really help things out. And one more thing I'd like to mention. You said that you had cracked windows in your basement or crawl space. That's not the thing to do in the summertime. That only contributes to the moisture problem. And what happens is the warm air from outside goes into the crawl space or basement, cools, and cool air can't hold as much water vapor as warm air, and condenses. So you think that you're doing the right thing by opening the windows in the basement or a crawl space, but not. It's counterproductive. And that's newer building science, and that really was that information that was commonly known up until the last 5-10 years or so. In fact, in the building codes of the state of New York, they used to have a provision in there to ventilate crawl spaces and introduce air into your crawl space. I think that has since been removed, but it's counterproductive. So there you go.
Andrea, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Darren Tracy is our guest today. And we go to Linda in Rotterdam. Linda.
Hello. Another mold question.
Hooray.
My camp in the Adirondacks, about 12 years ago, significant flood. But in the winter, of course, it's quite frozen. It's not heated. And I'm assuming there's mold underneath the paneling. Is that dangerous? I mean, is the cold weather killing the mold, or what's happening?
It's hard for me to say if it's dangerous or not. As I mentioned, mold needs three things to survive. And it's all around. Mold spores are all around us right now. But in order to thrive and grow, they need a food, they need the proper temperature, and they need moisture. So it's cold weather now. I doubt you're getting much mold because the building is not heated if it's camp and you don't keep it heated.
Right. And this was 12 years ago that this occurred.
Yeah, I would assume that it has dried out. You could do a little exploratory investigation, take one part of the wall section off or core drill, and if it's dried out, you're probably okay. If it's not dry and it's wet, then you should look into that further.
Okay. Well, I would think cold weather in 12 years and no more water probably dried out.
I would agree with you.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Over to Jesse and Troy. Jesse.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Seems like this is an insulation-heavy show.
That's great.
I also have an insulation question. So I have a Cape Cod that was built in the late 20s, and there's like a semi-finished attic, and the house has no soffits at all, so there's no soffit venting. And what somebody did to kind of try to insulate, I'm sure there was no insulation at some point, but they put up R19 bats tight to the sheathing, and then they kind of framed out a little area near the peak and put in two gable vents and a continuous roof vent. So the majority of the attic has only got R19, and it's tight to the sheathing, which I know is not the proper way to do it. There's basically no way to vent the soffits. So I'm wondering, I've thought about, you know, I think I could probably spray foam tight to the sheathing because you get the vapor barrier effect of the spray foam. Is that going to work for me? And are there any other options other than that might work for me?
Okay. It could possibly work for you. And I should explain two different types of insulating an attic space. And one is treating it as conditioned space, and if you spray foam the underside of the roof deck, you're treating that as a conditioned space, and the spray foam doesn't allow moisture to condense, and that's kind of one of the beauties of the spray foam that minimizes that moisture problem. But you have to be very careful in the application of that spray foam to make sure that you cover every single square inch of roof membrane, because if you don't, you'll end up with condensation in that area that's not covered. So that's one solution, and it can be very effective. It's a little bit on the pricey side.
That's my main concern.
yeah. And then another solution is to get rid of the bat insulation in between your roof rafters and install rigid insulation and create a cavity above your rigid insulation, and we'll call that unconditioned space. and you could seal up the edges of that rigid insulation to minimize the amount of air movement up into that space. And then you still would want to try to get some soffit ventilation. And you could do that by drilling small round holes, even if you don't have much of a roof overhang. You can get some small holes in there to maximize the amount of ventilation in that space. And also use the gable beds.
Yeah, the problem is there's no overhang at all. It's like, I don't even really understand it.
Right. Well, you could listen.
I actually extended the eaves down with some decorative, little ends and hung some plywood out so that I could get water shedding further away because it was coming off the roof and straight down the siding and into the basement.
It sounds like it's a real challenge. I'm thinking you might have the ability still, but maybe not enough surface area. So you might want to look into the spray foam a bit more closely.
All right, Jesse, thanks so much for the call. We now go to Esther in Schuylerville. Esther, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Nice to talk with you today.
Nice to have you here. Hey, can you turn your radio down a little bit?
I did.
Thank you.
Okay, now?
Yep, you're all set.
I know the rules. Okay, I have a mobile home. It's infested with yellow jackets and outside siding. What have I got to do?
Oh, boy. Yellow jackets underneath the outside siding.
Yep. It was a mess last summer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm really not.
It would have to be.
I mean,
go ahead.
I'm not an expert at that, and what I would advise might not be politically correct. But,
well, then don't do it. We'll get in trouble.
You know, one thing about those wasps. In yellow jackets might be considered a wasp. I'm not sure. Is that? And I researched this because I had this huge wasp nest on the underside of a soffit of our garage, and I saw my father do this when I was growing up. He'd wait until cool weather, and in the evening he'd take a paper bag and encapsulate the hive, and then cut it off with a knife, and then he'd have.
This isn't a hive.
Right. This is underneath the siding, yeah.
But it's getting to my point. I researched this, and my research told me that wasps die in the winter. They do not overwinter.
Oh, hallelujah.
Yeah. The queen will take off, but all the rest of them die.
But will they come back?
That's the question. I don't think so.
Because yellow jackets are not a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'm not sure.
They hurt when they bite.
Yeah.
I don't know if a yellow jacket falls into that wasp category or not. Maybe a collar can come in. But wasps, I read, die and do not overwinter. So if you're harvesting the nest for, some people like those, as an aesthetic feature or artistic feature, don't feel badly that you're killing the wasp because they die.
Right. But there's no way to even get to this. I would assume that, Esther, I know you're calling late in the show, but the next time Darren is on, I would be willing to bet you a buck that we will get a lot of calls and people will have had this problem and they'll have some suggestions for you.
When is he going to be on again?
That's a great question, and I can only ask my producer, Jim Lavoulis. I don't even know who's on tomorrow yet. So,
okay.
But we'll keep you posted. Thank you for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Good luck. And quickly over to Mary in Saratoga. Mary, you're on.
Oh, thank you. I just caught the tail end of your show, and I don't know if this is a pertinent question. I'm having trouble with my driveway. Every time I get it sealed, it's full of potholes. So I gave up 2 years ago. I'm in the house 20 years. And I gave up 2 years ago because no matter what fellows I hire, they seem to do an imperfect job and an unfinished job. And I'm a widow, and I'm 89 years old, and I feel like a jerk with these guys trying to do their job or to correct them. Excuse me, because I'm very... I'm not educated in asphalt and driveways. The driveway is about the length of two UPS trucks, long trucks, because I can't remember the figures. So I don't know if you have any recommendations, if I should change the surface of it or what I can do.
Okay.
Hi, Mary. You sound very spry for an 89-year-old.
Yes,
It sounds like your driveway has reached the end of its life, and seal coating over top is not going to help it. So what you should probably do is hire a blacktop company. They'll come in and they'll remove the existing blacktop, and they'll put down a what's called a subbase, a gravel material, which will provide good drainage, and it also provides strength so that when you lay a binder and a top coat of paving over top of that, you'll get a maximum life out of that.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I forgot to tell you, it slopes. It's on an incline as it goes down, and there's one spot underneath the tall trees I have that never, the ice never melts. So, but that's a different problem. One more thing, I'll be quick.
Okay.
Would it be worth it to change the topping to pavers or something else, or would that cost a fortune?
That typically costs more than blacktop. You can do that. Some people consider that more aesthetically pleasing. They do tend to move in this climate and require more maintenance. So asphalt's not a bad bet.
All right, Mary, we're just about out of time, but thank you so much for the call. You know, it's funny, those paved roads with the stones, there's still several in Albany.
Right.
They still look like they're in great shape.
They do, but
it's amazing.
Many of them are covered up or had been covered up with asphalt.
But some are still wide open, like over on West Lawrence.
Some are now, yeah. And I noticed that they do hold up pretty well. And, well, the pavers themselves, they're stone. They're not a man-made concrete product, so they don't suck up that much water, and so you don't have the freeze-thaw cycle problems.
Well, Darren, Tracy, thank you so much for being here. We'll see you soon. Support comes from Mother Earth Storehouse, serving the Hudson Valley, offering organic and natural items, and a selection of bulk items, including pasta, dried fruits, trail mix, coffee, tea, and spices, MotherEarthStorehouse.com. The University at Albany Theater Program, presenting Our Country's Good, a drama about the first convict colony and the redemptive power of theater and art, tomorrow through Sunday, albany.edu/theater. The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, reminiscing about how Kodak sold Americans on America by car, horseback, and on skis in Colorama, hydecollection.org. And Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine, exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art, visionxlicare.com. Thanks again to Darren Tracy for being here today. Thank you for being here today and for the great calls and emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Your phones are answered by Dina Salzman today. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. This is what's on tomorrow's show. Tomorrow, Avian Encyclopedia Rich Guthrie returns with your questions about birds. Right now, stand by for news.